Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Finals Countdown series, which is brought to you by MedTalks. In this series, we are providing all of you wonderful medical students with short, succinct, and super useful revision episodes for your upcoming exams in medical school and for generally lives as junior doctors in the future. We're in the gastroenterology section of this series, and in this episode, I'll be talking all about another type of cancer, and that's pancreatic cancer. But before we get on to talk about that, I'd just like to mention the sponsors of this episode. And this episode is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp, and that's help as in H-E-L-P. And guys, for all of you listeners who are medical students and are feeling stressed with revision and upcoming exams, sometimes this can get quite overwhelming, and we have all been there. If you feel like things are getting a bit much for you, then BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You can talk to a therapist in a completely private and online environment at your own convenience. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to help that may not be available in your area. And all you have to do is just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then they can get you matched with the therapist in just under 48 hours. After this, you then schedule a secure video and phone session. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages, and everything you share is absolutely and completely confidential. You can also request a new therapist at no additional charge anytime. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And just to make things even better, there is a special offer to all of you MedTalks listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp by entering the URL betterhelp.com/medtalks. That's betterhelp.com/medtalks. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. In this episode, we're going to be looking at pancreatic cancer. So what will you be learning throughout this episode? We'll be talking about what pancreatic cancer is. We'll be going through some of the statistics, looking at how it occurs, so looking at the risk factors and causes, how it presents. Then we'll move on to how we diagnose it. And then finally, looking at the management options and then the complications and prognosis. So the pancreas is a gland which is about 6 inches long, and it's located within the abdomen. It's shaped like a flat pear, and it's surrounded by multiple organs such as the stomach, the small intestine, and the liver. And it has two functions. So it has an exocrine function and an endocrine function. So what does this mean? So the pancreas is a mixed or heterocrine gland. So 99% of this function is exocrine and 1% is endocrine. As an endocrine gland, its functions are mostly to regulate the blood glucose levels. So it secretes hormones such as insulin, glucagon, somatostatin, and pancreatic polypeptide, all to regulate our blood sugar. And as its exocrine function, which is 99%, it's part of the digestive system. So it secretes pancreatic juices into the duodenum through the pancreatic duct. And these juices contain bicarbonate, which neutralizes the acid that enters the duodenum from the stomach, and also some digestive enzymes, which go on to break down carbohydrates, proteins, and fats in the food that enters from the stomach into the duodenum. Most pancreatic tumors are exocrine. Pancreatic cancer is the sixth most common cause of cancer-related deaths within the UK, and about 80% of cases are between 60 and 80 years old. 90% of pancreatic cancers are called ductal adenocarcinomas, and the majority occur in the head, the neck, or the uncinate process of the pancreas. Pancreatic cancer can most often metastasize to the liver, the peritoneum, and the lungs, and it's more common in white and black people than in Asian people. In terms of risk factors, smoking is a heavy risk factor. A diet which is high in red meat and low in fruit and vegetables, and having a high BMI, these are all risk factors. Having diabetes, excessive alcohol consumption, having chronic pancreatitis provides a 5 to 15 fold increase in risk, a family history of pancreatic cancer. Inflammatory bowel disease is also an associated factor, as is peptic ulcer disease, and the familial cancer syndrome, so having the BRCA genes, so BRCA1 and BRCA2, And the FAP, so familial adenomatous polyposis, is also associated as a risk factor. Moving on to the clinical features. Now, often early on, they are quite vague and non-specific. It can just be some epigastric discomfort or even a dull backache. And often, the significance is overlooked. More than two-thirds occur in the head of the pancreas, and it can classically present with a painless, obstructive, and progressive jaundice. If the mass is within the body and or the tail of the pancreas, then generally the symptoms are more non-specific and can just be simply weight loss. Also, patients can have abdominal pain, which is worse in the epigastric region that radiates to the back. Patients can also present in acute pancreatitis. This will present with upper abdominal pain that radiates to the back, tenderness on palpation of the abdomen in the epigastric region, a fever, tachycardia, nausea, and vomiting. Another feature to be aware about is something called steatorrhea. And steatorrhea essentially means an increase in fat excretion within the stools. And it's a sign of the exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. Because of the pancreatic tumor affecting the exocrine function, the pancreas is not producing these digestive juices to break down the fat. And as a result, the fat gets excreted within the stools. And this is called steatorrhea. A late finding may be an epigastric mass and also a palpable gallbladder, which is painless and presents with obstructive jaundice. And this is called the Courvoisier's sign or law. Compression of the duodenum by the mass may lead to gastric outlet obstruction, which leads to a delay in gastric emptying, and this can lead to nausea and vomiting. Invasion of the duodenum by the pancreatic mass can very rarely present with some upper GI bleeding. So it's extremely rare for the initial manifestation of an invasive pancreatic cancer to present with hematemesis or melena, but it's still something to be aware about. As always, we must consider the differential diagnoses and think about what other conditions may cause similar presenting features. So specifically for pancreatic cancer, some differentials to keep in mind would be a peptic ulcer, given this epigastric abdominal pain, some gallstones, a gastric cancer or even a colon cancer, esophagitis, hepatitis, a liver abscess, or even a liver cancer, and a less likely cause but still one to consider would be right-sided heart failure. Now we'll go on to talk about how we diagnose pancreatic cancer. So we've talked about the clinical features and talked about some of the signs that we may find on examination. Now let's think about some blood tests that we might want to do. So a full blood count may show a normochromic anemia of chronic disease, suggestive of a malignancy. Liver function tests may show signs of jaundice, so a raised bilirubin, alkaline phosphatase, and the GGT. There may be hyperglycemia because the pancreas is no longer performing its endocrine function as normal. And also, pancreatic cancer has an associated tumor marker called the CA19-9, which is elevated. However, be careful with this one because high levels of CA19-9 can indicate other types of cancer or even non-cancerous conditions like cirrhosis and gallstones. And because high levels of this tumor marker can mean different things, it's not used by itself to screen for pancreatic cancer. So that's blood tests. Now, what about imaging? The initial imaging for suspicion of pancreatic cancer is most commonly an abdominal ultrasound, mainly because this is the easiest scan to arrange in a much quicker time frame. This may demonstrate a pancreatic mass or even a dilated biliary tree. And if it's late stage disease, then it may even show some ascites or potential hepatic mets. But in terms of the gold standard for diagnosis, then the CT imaging is the gold standard because it provides, as I said, the diagnosis and it can provide some prognostic information because it can stage some disease progression. Following on from that, a CT of the chest, abdomen and pelvis will be further required once the cancer has been diagnosed for more definitive staging. And if there's any unclear diagnostic cases, then a PET CT scan or an MRCP may be useful. Endoscopic ultrasounds are also now widely used for the staging of the adenocarcinoma, alongside a potential tissue biopsy for histological confirmation. So now I'll move on to talk about the management options that we have available for pancreatic cancer. The only curative option is currently a radical resection, but unfortunately less than 20% of patients at diagnosis do have a resectable tumour. And the tumours are classified as resectable, borderline resectable, or locally advanced. And this depends on how much contact there is between the tumour and any surrounding vessels, and also the presence of any metastatic disease. Any patients with locally advanced or metastatic disease have to be considered as having unresectable tumours. In terms of surgery, the procedure that's performed will depend mainly on where the tumour is, and these are usually open procedures. So if the tumour is in the head of the pancreas, then the patients will undergo a pancreaticoduodenectomy, which is termed a Whipple's procedure. And alongside this, they'll have a regional lymphadenectomy, so removal of the lymph nodes in the region. And if the tumour is in the body or the tail, then they will undergo a distal pancreatectomy, plus minus a splenectomy, and then removal of the lymph nodes. There is a high morbidity that's associated with these procedures, and complications can include the formation of a pancreatic fistula, pancreatic insufficiency, and delayed gastric emptying. Any patients undergoing surgical procedures should have adjuvant chemotherapy. So a Whipple's procedure involves the removal of the head of the pancreas, the antrum of the stomach, the first and second parts of the duodenum, the common bile duct, and the gallbladder. And all of the viscera that are removed in this operation are done so because they all have a common arterial supply, which is the gastroduodenal artery. And this is shared by the head of the pancreas and the duodenum. After this is done, the tail of the pancreas and the hepatic duct are attached to the jejunum, which then allows for the bile and pancreatic juices to drain into the gut, and the stomach is subsequently anastomosed with the jejunum, allowing for the passage of food. Patients who have locally advanced disease, so if they have direct contact with the local vessels or even invasion of the local vessels, unfortunately can't undergo curative resection, and so they'll have chemotherapy. And patients who have metastatic disease, then palliative chemotherapy is the mainstay of treatment. People who have a poor performance status, so lots of comorbidities, poor functional baseline, should be considered for symptomatic management only. So if they have obstructive jaundice and pruritus, then this can be resolved with the insertion of a biliary stent. And any exocrine insufficiency can lead to malabsorption and steatorrhea that I mentioned previously. And this can be managed with enzyme replacements, such as Creon. And Creon is essentially a commercial mixture of pancreatic enzymes such as amylase, lipase, and protease, and it's used to treat the malabsorption syndrome that occurs because of pancreatic issues. Unfortunately, pancreatic cancer does have a high metastatic capacity, even in the smaller tumours, and metastasis is quite common at the time of diagnosis. The prognosis remains very poor, and unfortunately, the overall 5-year survival rate is less than 5%. So that's the exocrine pancreatic tumour. Now I'll just briefly touch on the endocrine tumours of the pancreas. And these arise from the endocrine cells within the pancreas. And they are either functional or non-functional tumours based on their hormone secretion status. So the functional tumours secrete hormones actively, and their signs and symptoms are actually related to this. Whilst the non-functional tumours do not secrete any active hormones, and the signs and symptoms that patients present with are purely related to the malignant spread. Endocrine tumours of the pancreas are often associated with the multiple endocrine neoplasia 1 syndrome, or the MEN 1 syndrome, and this typically consists of hyperparathyroidism, endocrine pancreatic tumours, and pituitary tumours, which are usually prolactinomas. The clinical features will depend on which hormone is being released from which cells. So you get glucagonomas that increase blood glucose concentration, which leads to hyperglycemia, diabetes. You can get insulinomas, which leads to decreased blood glucose concentrations. So that can cause symptomatic hypoglycemia, which present with confusion, altered mental state, sweating. And you can get somatostatinomas. So this inhibits the release of growth hormone, thyroid stimulating hormone, prolactin from the anterior pituitary gland. And this can lead to weight loss, diabetes, steatorrhea, gallstones because of the inhibition of cholecystokinin, and you get multiple other omas. In terms of investigations and management, well, it needs an MDT discussion where management can be guided, and you'll need certain specific special blood tests based on the hormone that's secreted. but you'll need lots of imaging, so CT, MRI, endoscopic ultrasounds. The definitive management options will be best made by the MDT discussions, and this will either be observation or resection, or even some pharmacological agents to combat the effects of the hormones. So guys, that brings me to the end of this episode. As promised, I've covered everything you guys should know about pancreatic cancer, so including what the pancreas does, its exocrine and endocrine functions. We talked about the statistics and the risk factors for pancreatic cancer, looking at the clinical features, the diagnosis, how we manage it, and then the prognosis. And then finally, we touched on the endocrine tumors as well. As always, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please remember to provide us with some of your feedback. You can message us on Instagram. Our Instagram is medtalks.uk, or send us an email, and our email address is helenmedtalks@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can leave us a comment and a review on the Apple Podcast platform, if that's where you listen to it. Please do share these episodes with your friends, your peers, and anyone else who you may think who may find them useful. We have got lots more coming up, so do stay tuned for those. And as always, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for all of your support. We look forward to bringing you more revision content in the future, so stay tuned. And thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And guys, if you need to, then take charge of your mental health and get 10% off your first month of therapy by searching betterhelp.com/medtalks. Thank you, and all the best.